Legal Q&A with Coulter Roche Lawyers, station sponsor.
The content of this program is intended only to provide a summary and general overview of matters of interest. It is not intended to be comprehensive, nor does it constitute legal advice. Any opinions or recommendations in this presentation have been prepared without taking into account your personal circumstances or needs. You should seek legal or other professional advice before acting or relying on any of the content.
And I'm joined in the studio by Bronwyn from Coulter Roche Lawyers. How are you, Bronwyn?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mitch. Very well indeed.
And good to see you. And today we're going to be talking about power of attorney. And that's all part of the estate planning that you guys do at Coulter Roche?
That's right, it is. When Kevin Roche was in here a fortnight ago, he spoke about wills. And so often when people are talking or thinking about their estate planning, they think about what will happen when they pass away and having a plan in place for that. But nowadays it's becoming increasingly so important to ensure that you have planning in place in the event that you lose capacity. There are statistics which show that perhaps by the year 2050, in terms of the onset of Alzheimer's and dementia in our community, up to almost 1 million people will be living with that disease. What it means then is that people will be unable to manage their own affairs. And so it's important that they have put a plan in place for that whilst they are still able to do so. And there are a variety of things that they can do for that. And the planning is simple. The documentation is not difficult to prepare, but it is extremely powerful. And what it means then is that they have appointed people who they trust to take over a number of roles for them in the event that they're incapacitated. But also, for example, if they're travelling overseas or if they're away from the country and they need someone to be able to make decisions for them in their absence. Now, there are four broad types of powers of attorney that are available. Just as a note to the listeners, people might have previously prepared what are known as general powers of attorney, and those powers of attorney, Mitch, don't actually endure beyond your lack of capacity. Right. So there might have been a power of attorney that you prepared to give someone authority for a particular thing, like to sell your home at some stage. But once you lose capacity, those powers of attorney are no longer valid because that ends then at the lack of your capacity. So enduring powers of attorney cover four main areas. The first one is financial. The second is medical treatment. The third is a guardianship power of attorney. And for those of our listeners where it's relevant, there are also corporate powers of attorney. Now, in respect of financial powers of attorney, those are people that you appoint to have responsibility for your financial matters, for legal matters as well. So, for example, the sale of your home, access to your bank accounts and matters such as that. You can appoint a number of people to that role. You can appoint them in different ways. So if you had one person, so if I wanted to appoint my husband, he would be my sole power of attorney. Then I could have alternative powers of attorney in the event that he's unable to act, and I could appoint them jointly or jointly and severally. And what's really important for listeners is that they identify those people who they trust to be able to make these decisions for them. The next class of powers of attorney is medical treatment powers of attorney. Now, they operate slightly differently, obviously, in their function. The first thing is that they don't actually come into effect in operation until you've lost capacity. And you can actually only appoint one person and then one alternate or one substitute. And what you need to do, importantly, in respect of your medical treatment power of attorney, if you are the donor of that power, Mitch, is that you need to be talking to the people that you are going to appoint about your wishes in terms of what it is that you would want at that time. Now, one of the things that we have here in the Barwon region that we have access to through the Respecting Patients' Choices program are what are known as an advanced care plan. And often what we'll do at Coulter Roche is speak to our clients about them talking to their GP or otherwise to the advanced care planning unit through Barwon Health about what their wishes would be in respect of end-life care. Because what you've got is you've got people who are empowered, who have a responsibility, who at a time when things will be difficult and stressful will need to make a decision. And what you want is for them to be cognizant of your choices so that they do so respecting what your wishes were. It's a really easy process to be able to have that discussion with your GP and then with your family. You complete a document that's known as your statement of choices. And we often encourage, as part of that holistic view, that our clients do that as well.
So with that statement of choices, where does that go once it's completed?
It's kept by your GP. There's a copy that you retain as well. And what we also encourage is that you provide that to the person that you might appoint as your medical treatment power of attorney. Because not only will they be making decisions potentially about end of life at some stage, obviously, but also through the course of any treatment that you require, whether it's rehabilitative or preventative, whether it's surgery, they'll be able to be guided by what they understand to be your wishes at that time. So it's just important as part of a holistic plan for your, for looking after yourself, that those things are in place. Now, your guardianship power of attorney, which is the third type of power of attorney, that relates to accommodation and lifestyle decisions. Now, it actually doesn't come into effect until you have actually lost capacity, unlike your financial power of attorney, where someone can actually be empowered to act immediately. And you can still have the capacity to make decisions. You know, we have some clients, because they're not able to get out of their home or the aged care facility where they are, they're happy to prepare a financial power of attorney and have their children perhaps go to the bank or make decisions for them in that regard. But a guardianship power of attorney will only come into effect when someone has actually lost capacity. And it relates to accommodation and lifestyle decisions. We find increasingly that a number of aged care facilities are requesting that someone have one of those powers for someone potentially to move them into a facility of that nature. For some clients where we have some concerns about protecting their interests, what we may recommend is that they make that subject to a medical a report from their treating practitioner to say that at that relevant time, yes, that person no longer has capacity to make those decisions, and it is actually in their best interests at that stage that person then make those decisions for them. The other thing nowadays too is that with the advent of home care packages and the increase in that work that the government has made as part of the aged care changes more recently in the reforms, is that sometimes a guardianship power of attorney will allow someone to agree to and establish those packages for in-home care for mum and dad, or for anyone where it is that they're caring for them and that authority has been provided to them through that documentation. And finally, there's the corporate power of attorney. So where you may find that you have the authority as a sole director for a company, if something was to happen to you, you need to ensure that arrangements have been put in place for someone to take over, the paying of suppliers, to ensure that your staff salaries and superannuation, those sorts of obligations are being met. So this person will stand in that role for you to take over those responsibilities. The other thing too for corporate powers of attorney is that you may have some listeners who have self-managed superannuation funds, and that's an area that we find in our work at Culture Roach, that a number of people are becoming more heavily involved in this, wanting to take a greater degree of control of their superannuation. But if they have a corporate trustee, of which they are the sole director, it's imperative that they have a corporate power of attorney in place, because otherwise there is a risk that central management and control will arguably not be met in the event that they're incapacitated or they've gone off overseas on holiday. So those are the four broad areas. And the reason why it's important, Mitch, to have powers of attorney in place is that in the absence of those, if someone is then incapacitated for some reason, is that there's quite a lengthy and more expensive process to be able to appoint someone to those roles, which means that you have to go off to VCAT, Victorian Civil Administrative Tribunal. And the types of issues that arise there potentially is delay, because you have to make an application through the guardianship list there. There is obviously an increased cost. And also, they're not necessarily going to have appointed the person that you might have elected if you were the donor of that power. VCAT may determine to appoint an institutional guardian or administrator, so state trustees or the Office of Public Advocate. And unfortunately, as we have seen at our office, if there are disputes between siblings as to who should be caring for mum and dad, and people think that the only reason why one of those siblings may be interested is because they have a vested interest in the estate, you end up with a dispute and that becomes costly and adds to further delay and stress in the family. So simple documentation, but so important, and as part of that complete plan, so addressing your will, but then also looking at what it is that you need to have in place in the event that something happens to you where your will won't take effect because you're still alive, but you need to have someone make those decisions for you.
Yeah, so everyone really needs to have this sorted out, I suppose.
They do, absolutely. And look, it's an important discussion to have with your family because obviously for the purposes of things like medical treatment, it pertains to matters that are really personal and people will have varying views guided by a number of different things in terms of that regard. But also what it means then is that your wishes will be respected. It allows you to identify those people that you trust. It also means when you're having conversations with your family about if you need to move out of your home, where it is that you want to go. So you're making those decisions long term for yourselves as well in that regard.
Yeah. Now, a recurring theme is that lost capacity angle. And I suppose, how do you define it in a broad brush sense as to what that means? It means someone can't perform a duty that they want the power of attorney to take over from in
that area.
That's
correct. That's right. So a loss of capacity, is assessed generally by a medical practitioner in terms of what they do as a mini mental test. But what it is it's when someone is not free of a mental disorder and where they don't have the ability to understand what it is that they are doing. And look, with the onset of, diseases like Alzheimer's and with an increasing number of people who physically are well because of advances in medical science, but unfortunately don't have that capacity. So when it is that decisions need to be made about selling a home, rolling over term deposits, all of those types of things that they may not have the capacity to do. And that's when those decisions are important.
Yeah, that's really, really important. And in terms of the medical person, the medical power of attorney, who would you choose?
Look, ordinarily people will appoint their spouses in the first instance. So a husband will appoint his wife and vice versa.
Yep.
But of course, then what you need to do is look at who might be a reasonable alternate or substitute, and again, people generally keep that within the family.
Now, I believe we do have a question. Lisa is on the line. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thanks for calling. I've got a son who's just bought a house. He's only 24.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be recommended now that he's starting to get some assets, is that a good time for him to do power of attorney?
Oh, absolutely, Lisa. Both a will and powers of attorney. I mean, the first thing is that if he's the sole proprietor of that property and something was to happen to him and, for instance, it needed to be sold, no one else at that stage now can make that decision save for him. So it would be important that he appointed someone who could assist him with that. But the other thing, too, is now that he owns that property, the question is where does that go in the event that he passes away? The other thing that so many young people overlook, even before they actually own a property, which is fantastic that your son does now at that young age, is he no doubt has access to superannuation or he's accumulated super. He needs to look as well at where he is that he's directed that to go in the event of his death. So even young people, but now that he's taken that step into home ownership, all of those sorts of things are important things for him to look at. So who does he trust to make those decisions in the event that he's incapacitated? The other thing too is that depending on what it is that your son does, he may find that he travels overseas or he may be out of the jurisdiction, say he's gone away to another state and something needs to happen with that property. What we don't want to have is a situation where that's delayed, for example, a sale or even a tenancy agreement or something like that, because he can't sign documentation because he's not here. And so if he trusts you or if there's someone else that he wants to appoint, then that would absolutely be something that he should do. And importantly now as well, look at a will and where it is that his superannuation is also directed to go, whether he has a partner or whether he wants that to go to his estate.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Does that answer your question, Lisa?
Yeah, more than what I wanted. Thank you. Very thorough. Thank you.
No, that's fine. My pleasure.
Thank you very much for the call. So there you go. But that's an interesting point about the catalyst, I suppose, that makes people decide to take out powers of attorney and get in their wills and things in order. And that's sort of when you're starting to build up those assets.
Absolutely, Mitch. That's right. I mean, there are a series of things within your life that we say are triggers for when it is that you should either review or actually look at establishing your estate planning. And obviously buying a property or getting involved in a business is one of those. And again, marriage or divorce or separation, we find a number of our clients come to us in those circumstances. And also where people may have prepared wills or plans years ago that just need to be reviewed because beneficiaries or executors have changed.
Yeah. Now, In terms of the medical, the person, the power of attorney, is the backup in place only if the primary person can't perform the
Correct.
Role?
That's right. It is. So that person either needs to have predeceased or be unwilling, unable or incapable of acting at that stage, and then you would use your alternates. And the same operates with the financial power of attorney as well, which is why it's always really useful to have an alternate position and to give consideration to when it is, you know, who that person would be. So then that plan is in place long term.
So what I understood from the financial is you can have unlimited financial powers of attorney?
Look, you can do, but I mean, there's no sense in doing that because you need a workable arrangement. The other thing too is that you don't want to provide a document that appoints umpteen people to that role because then you need to, you know, you want to make sure that you're putting people in that you trust. Generally, people will elect two or three beyond their alternative should they want one person from the outset, and that means that that's sufficient. If they want them to act jointly or by way of majority, those are the sorts of things that we build into that documentation then to provide those protections.
So do you give each person control of a different aspect? I suppose what happens if they overlap and there may be even a conflict? Is that possible?
Not ordinarily. In terms of medical treatment and financial, they're obviously very different matters. For the purposes of a guardianship power of attorney, both the financial and the medical treatment will trump that. Mm. So in terms of being involved in guardianship decisions, the medical treatment power of attorney, if that is a different person, and look, ordinarily they are not, but that person will hold the greatest sway.
All right, and we'll go to the line with Leo. He's got a question for the segment this morning. Leo, hello, how are you?
Morning, Leo.
Yourself?
Yeah, good, thanks. And what's your question?
About a will and power of attorney.
Yeah.
When someone actually passes away and they don't have a will but they have a power of attorney, does that give the person the, what would you say, the jurisdiction over the...
No, it doesn't actually, Leo. When someone passes away, the power of attorney ends immediately. So whatever authority was granted to you pursuant to the power of attorney then ends, because that power of attorney is only valid during the time of that person's life. So what happens then is that their will would take effect and you would look at who their executors are. But if they don't have a will, then what happens is that person dies what's known as intestate, so that is without a will. And then we have law here in Victoria that actually provides effectively a flow chart in terms of where it is that assets would be distributed. And what has to happen then is someone has to step up who may be identified as someone who could be the administrator of that person's estate. So, for example, if it was your mum who passed away without a will, as an example, what you might decide between yourself and your siblings is that there's a couple of you who will take on the role as administrators, and then you are appointed to the court by the court pursuant to what are known as letters of administration for the distribution of her estate. The thing about that, obviously, is it's much better if a will is actually in place, because that provides a plan both for who those people are to be as executors and where it is that those assets are to go. And look, one of the things that you could say for the purposes of the appointment of an administrator is that if mum has always had you as their attorney and someone that they trusted, then you would be in a position to perhaps say to family members, look, I know about all of her assets. I've been managing everything for her to this point. I think I'm the right person to step up and take on that role. But it doesn't allow you or entitle you to that, no. So
I've got friends who have got the family farm dispute going on.
Oh, okay, all right.
The classic family farm dispute, but the son who was the power of attorney isn't liked by the other siblings.
Okay, look, and look, that... Yeah, no, and that does raise difficulties. So, and look, farming disputes and farming, you know, land and circumstances in respect of estate planning is a very complex area. We're blessed at Coulter Roach to have the expertise of Richard Dwyer, who's someone who's done the succession planning in that area for a number of years. But certainly where those sorts of things are anticipated or arise, you know, it's best to get really good advice as to how to avoid that or manage it. Yeah. Thanks, Leo.
Complicated one.
It is. They always are.
Then you find you have to do more what would you call social working as well around that.
No, that's right. Well, look, you don't. I mean, it's about providing people with support during that. And, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, what's most important is to have the documentation in place for clarity in estate planning, which is what we try to do with our clients in terms of that holistic approach.
Yeah. Right, thanks.
Thanks for the call, Leo. Well, there you go. Well, there's certainly been a few questions, and I've got to say you handled it very, very well.
Thanks, Mitch, for a Monday morning.
Yes, I know. It's straight into it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But thank you so much for coming in. This whole podcast is going to be up on our website because there's a lot of complex information here, and I think people might want to listen back once again to make sure that they don't miss out on anything.
No, absolutely. Well, look, thank you very much for having us.
Thank you very much, Bronwyn there from Coulter Roche Lawyers, our station sponsors with Legal Q&A. And they'll be back in a fortnight, I believe, talking about family law then, and then back to wills or at estates in a month's time.